The moment became a longer moment, and suddenly it was a very long moment, so long one could hardly tell where all the time was coming from. For Arthur, who could usually contrive to feel self-conscious if left alone for long enough with a Swiss cheese plant, the moment was one of sustained revelation. He felt on the sudden like a cramped and zoo-born animal who awakes one morning to find the door to his cage hanging quietly open and the savannah stretching grey and pink to the distant rising sun, while all around new sounds are waking. He wondered what the new sounds were as he gazed at her openly wondering face and her eyes that smiled with a shared surprise. He hadn't realized that life speaks with a voice to you, a voice that brings you answers to the questions you continually ask of it, had never consciously detected it or recognized its tones till it now said something it had never said to him before, which was, yes. Fenchurch dropped her eyes away at last with a tiny shake of her head. I know, she said. I shall have to remember, she added, that you are the sort of person who cannot hold on to a simple piece of paper for 2 minutes without winning a raffle with it. She turned away. Let's go for a walk, she said quickly. Hyde Park. I'll change into something less suitable. She was dressed in a rather severe dark dress, not a particularly shapely one, and it didn't really suit her. I wear it especially for my cello teacher, she said. He's a nice old boy, but I sometimes think all that bowing gets him a bit excited. I'll be down in a minute. She ran lightly up the steps to the gallery above and called down, Put the bottle in the fridge for later. He noticed, as he slipped the champagne bottle into the door, that it had an identical twin to sit next to. He walked over to the window and looked out. He turned and started to look at her records. From above he heard the rustle of her dress falling to the ground. He talked to himself about the sort of person he was. He told himself very firmly that for this moment at least he would keep his eyes very firmly and steadfastly locked on the spines of her records. Read the titles, nod appreciatively, count the blasted things if he had to. He would keep his head down. This he completely, utterly, and abjectly failed to do. She was staring down at him with such intensity that she seemed hardly to notice that he was looking up at her. Then suddenly she shook her head, dropped the light sundress down over herself, and disappeared quickly into the bathroom. She emerged a moment later, all smiles, and with a sun hat, and came tripping down the steps with extraordinary lightness. It was a strange kind of dancing motion she had. She saw that he noticed it and put her head slightly on one side. Like it? She said. You look gorgeous, he said simply because she did. Hmm, she said, as if he hadn't really answered her question. She closed the upstairs front door, which had stood open all this time, and looked around the little room to see that it was all in a fit state to be left on its own for a while. Arthur's eyes followed hers around, and while he was looking in the other direction, she slipped something out of a drawer and into the canvas bag she was carrying. Arthur looked back at her. Ready? Did you know, she said with a slightly puzzled smile, that there's something wrong with me? Her directness caught Arthur unprepared. Well, he said, I'd heard some vague sort of... I wonder how much you do know about me, she said. If you heard from where I think you heard, then that's not it. Russell just sort of makes stuff up, because you can't deal with what it really is. A pang of worry went through Arthur. Then what is it, he said. Can you tell me? Don't worry, she said. It's nothing bad at all, just unusual, very, very unusual. She touched his hand, then leant forward and kissed him briefly. I should be very interested to know, she said, if you manage to work out what it is this evening. Arthur felt that if someone had tapped him at that point, he would have chimed, like the deep, sustained, rolling chime his grey fishbowl made when he flicked it with his thumbnail. Chapter 19. Ford Prefect was irritated to be continually wakened by the sound of gunfire. He slid himself out of the maintenance hatchway, which he had fashioned into a bunk for himself, by disabling some of the noisier machinery in its vicinity and padding it with towels. He slung himself down the access ladder and prowled the corridors moodily. They were claustrophobic and ill-lit, and what light there was continually flickering and dimming as power surged this way and that through the ship, causing heavy vibrations and rasping humming noises. That wasn't it, though. He paused and leaned back against the wall as something that looked like a small silver power drill flew past him down the dim corridor with a nasty, searing screech. That wasn't it either. He clambered listlessly through a bulkhead door and found himself in a larger corridor, though still ill-lit. The ship lurched. It had been doing this a fair bit, but this was heavier. A small platoon of robots went by, making a terrible clattering. Still not it, though. Acrid smoke was drifting up from one end of the corridor, so he walked along it in the other direction. He passed a series of observation monitors let into the walls behind plates of toughened but still badly scratched perspex. One of them showed some horrible green scaly reptilian figure ranting and raving about the single transferable vote system. It was hard to tell whether he was for it or against it, but he clearly felt very strongly about it. Ford turned the sound down. That wasn't it, though. He passed another monitor. It was showing a commercial for some brand of toothpaste that would apparently make you feel free if you used it. There was some nasty blaring music with it, too, but that wasn't it.